Shalom, good morning. This is Radio Shalom coming to 3-Axis Radio, Planet 104.6 FM. Good morning, Rabbi.
Good morning, John.
Well, we're delighted to have in the studio again this morning Rabbi Altshul, who is going to talk about the latest festivals. So we're getting ready for Simchas Torah.
Well, no, you're preempting events. We've got to get over Shemini Atzeret first, aren't we?
Sorry.
Yes.
About your superior knowledge.
No, by no means. This, of course, comes to you Sunday morning, and just as we're leaving the Sukkah, today is, of course, Hoshana Rabbah, and Hoshana Rabbah is sort of, it's said that the judgment that was passed on Rosh Hashanah and sealed on Yom Kippur, today is where the day is where the gates close, and you can still kick in, you know, a foot in the door and try to get an extra spot on the on the good list. Hoshana Rabbah, we also ask for rain, and it's the last day where we use the lulav and etrog. This morning would be the last time we are waving around the palm fronds. And
what happens to the discarded?
Well, here in New Zealand, I used to think that there are two things you're certain about in life, and those are death and taxes. But I found out that the New Zealand Ministry of Agriculture and Fisheries are quite sure as well. They will be coming to pick it up, and they will destroy it. We have, thank God, we're very grateful to the MAF that they allow us every year to bring in lulav and etrog from Israel. But due to the general fear of biological contamination, my office is a transitory zone, and only authorized personnel can enter at the moment because
they have to wear white suits and masks and stuff.
Almost. But I mean, I can certainly understand why New Zealand is very, very protective about the environment, because there are a few, let's just say, unwelcome guests here, varroa mite, different fruit flies, and, well, I can certainly understand and appreciate that they don't want any extra surprises in the country. So, therefore, the lulav and the etrog are kept under pretty strict conditions, and they will be destroyed, unfortunately. But under other circumstances, I would probably have put the lulav in my garage and then used it at Pesach for when burning the chametz, or I would have saved it for next year, putting it on top of my sukkah next year, because there's this beautiful idea that a thing that has been used for a mitzvah can be used for a second mitzvah. Yeah. And the hadassim, the
recycling it.
Exactly. And the myrtle you can also use for havdalah. And in many families, they would take the etrog and then they would stuff it with cloves. And when the etrog would dry, it would lock in. Ah, you got cloves there. There's cinnamon in here. I should say a blessing. You got cinnamon, you got cloves. Very nice. That's normally only after Shabbat we'll do that. And then you use that dried in etrog for Havdalah. And that way, giving it. But I personally prefer making either jam or limoncella.
Limoncella?
Yes.
What's that?
Well, limoncello is something they figured out in Italy, of course, where you take the yellow zest from the lemon and then you soak it with alcohol. You draw out the oils after a month. Have a very, very strong, you get 80 or 90% alcohol. And then you dilute it down to around 35 with a light sugary concoction. So you get this lemony sweet drink, which is fantastic.
You're going to sell it at the shop?
Well, the problem is I can't use them. I can't use them here. So, because, as a matter of fact, etrog has a slightly different taste than lemon. Also, if you rub the skin, you would smell that. It's slightly different. Etrog, as a matter of fact, grows to quite a large size, and it has been grown for its oil. for citrus oil.
Right, so...
So they go to disintegration, unfortunately. It saddens me every year. I wish we could keep them, but we would have to fumigate them, and fumigation is a couple of $1,000. And they're not cheap, such etrogen will have brought all the way from Israel. And fumigation does make them considerably more expensive.
So, having said goodbye to our Sukkot, we now welcome...
We welcome Shemini Atzeret. Shemini Atzeret. What is that? Shemini, it's sort of... It's in the name Atzeret. It's an eighth additional day. Because Sukkot, we have to celebrate for 7 days. And that is Sukkot. Shemini Atzeret. It's a festival to itself. It's sort of like, we use the parable that, sort of like the king saying to his children, he says, now you've all, princes and princesses, been home for a whole week in the castle. We've had a ball of a time. Please, stay for just one more day. It's a beautiful thought that God does not want, even though we take leave of our Sukkot, God wants us to remain in this festive and... Well,
it's a bridge.
It's a bridge, but it's not only a bridge. It becomes a festival in itself. Mm. And that's why the first day Shemini Atzeret and the second day Simchat Torah, because technically they are both Shemini Atzeret. Mm. Because like everything else, we celebrate holidays 2 days outside of Israel and only 1 day in Israel.
So it's a fairly ancient...
Shemini Atzeret is mentioned in the Torah. It says very clearly... After Sukkot, stay for another day. And a lot of rituals, and on that day, Shemini Atzeret, we start praying for rain in Eretz Israel. Because now, of course, is the time where summer slowly comes to an end. And generally, we consider rain during Sukkot a curse. But from Shemini Atzeret onwards, it should be a blessing, because... In Middle Eastern countries, this is the time where the grain begins to grow. It can't grow during the heat of summer. It would wither and go. There is no... I mean, that's perfect for citrus fruit and for other kinds of fruit. But for grains, certainly not. You need a cooler climate. You need more water. And therefore, we ask already now to give the rains that will make the grain sprout and grow. Just in the right amount, no deluges, nothing. But from Shemini Atzeret forward, we add to our daily prayers the request for rain. And you can say, why on earth would I need to request rain here in Auckland? I mean, there's plenty of it to go around. Well, halavai, we could just send 15% of it to Israel, because then I'm sure that Israel as well would have more than plenty of water. But unfortunately, we all know that Israel is lacking water. It's the sad fact that already Avraham Avinu, Abraham and Sarah knew that if the rains don't come, well, then there is no harvest. And if there is no harvest, there is no food. And there was a great hunger in the land, and they went down to Egypt. And that was how some of us started. Yes, wasn't it? So we asked Allah for rain. As a matter of fact, in the temple in Jerusalem, there would be a special ceremony called Simchat Beit HaShoeva. And not that I want to profane anything, but it was basically a huge water fight. They would be gushing water on the altar. They would say special prayers, everything relating to water, hoping that the water would flow. And it says in the Gemara that... Those who hadn't seen Simchat Beit HaShoeva, the happiness of the Beit HaShoeva ceremony, had not seen happiness in their life. I can just see grown men going completely bonkers with big buckets throwing water at each other. We all turn
That's
into...
That's the day before water pistols.
Yes, exactly. Well, they'll probably have bladders and whatever to toss around with it. So on Shemini Atzeret, that's the main purpose. There is a special prayer, which has a very harrowing melody, but it's known as Geshem, which means rain. And it has a cousin on the other side of Pesach, which is called Tal. Tal is, of course, dew, because during summertime we ask that the dew may fall on the ground and give plentiful nourishment to the plants that grow during summer. But we don't ask for rain, because it will not rain. We ask for Tal. So we have these two Geshem Tal, and they have two very special prayers. One is said on Sekhidah in Pesach, and the other one is said on Shemini Atzeret. And then in Israel, Shemini Atzeret, of course, is only one day, and therefore in the evening has the character of Shemini Atzeret, but already there they start dancing in the streets with the Sifrei Torah, with the Torah scrolls. They take them out, and, you know, silver is taken off, and is paraded around in procession. Because the next day in Israel, and here for us, the second day, it's Simchat Torah. Mm. And Simchat Torah, that is rejoicing in the Torah. We're celebrating that, well, we finished off Moshe Rabbeinu's song, Hasino, and then at exactly the same time as we roll up one sefer, we open the next one on Bereshit.
That's where you have the bridegrooms.
Exactly, we have the grooms. It's a very special honor, which very often are bestowed on people who have, we've taken their hands out of their pockets to help in the community, not fiscally, but physically. People who come day after day, tirelessly participating and making sure that there's a minion, who serve on boards. And, you know, really the unsung and unseen heroes of our community, those who are not afraid to get dirty to get things done. You know, we can all pay for absolution and paying our memberships and everything else and then not use it and think, well, I paid, therefore, you know.
I am.
Yes, I paid, therefore I am. No, wow. But a Jewish community is an organism. It's an organism where it doesn't work properly if it hasn't got all the organs. If some of the organs have gone off on holiday in wherever, you know, you take the liver out of the equation and then it doesn't work. You take the pinky toe out of the equation and some of the balance is gone. And you know, all these organs and limbs and everything, well, they all do different things, but they're all essential in making up a whole human being. And the same with the Jewish community. You know, we need the schleppers, we need the followers, we need the leaders, we need everybody. And that's what's so important. And it's these people who, well, maybe apart from the rabbi who sees them all the time and says thank you, but the whole community should know these people. And you know, some are so modest, they will not even accept this. No, no, rabbi, that's not for me. Why not? I mean, you're a perfect example for everybody else. You're a case study. Let me show you off to the rest of the community so they could see how grateful we are for all the fantastic work. But you don't have to be grateful, rabbi. I just enjoy what I do. I know you enjoy what you do, but I want more people to know that there is something to enjoy. And then it's fantastic to be an active and participating member of a community, of a family.
And so that's the honor given to ending the reading and
so the Chatan Torah is the one that finishes off.
He gets for the year.
Yes. Basically, in the last Sidra of the year, Hasino, we read, every man in the community gets an aliyah, every member. So normally you have two readings going. And, you know, they just go, the aliyot are pretty short, everybody gets three lines, and then the last part of that is given to the Chatan Torah. And then there is the Chatan Bereshit, who, of course, gets the honor of starting up the new Sefer. And then there's a special mitzvah. It's called Chatan Kol HaNe'arim. Kol HaNe'arim, what does that mean? It means all of the youth. And we have a very beautiful tradition that when the Kol HaNe'arim, Chatan Kol HaNe'arim is called up, all the under bar mitzvah kids are called up with them. And a chuppah is extended over them. This is something very special. You see the whole bima full with children, and he says the brachot, and all the kids say amen, and they read. And I think that's
it's a very moving ceremony to find the talus over the children.
Absolutely.
And they're boys and girls.
Yes. As long as they're under that age, then there's golly, you always out to get me, aren't you?
Well, you know, it's paraded around with the Torah, but it's the men and boys who parade around.
No, I'm sorry.
And the underbat mitzvah
girls. I disagree with you.
Oh, goody.
Completely. I generally pass on a Sefer Torah to my wife, and my wife takes it to the women, and the women, we don't do it inside the shul because of all the pews, and you can't really do any serious dancing between the pews unless you want to break a leg, God forbid. So what we do is, when we do the hakafot, the encirclements of the bama, of the podium, then we walk out of the shul and into the common area, which is just behind the shul in Gray's Avenue, and there the dancing begins.
The intermingling.
Oh, and we sing. You know, there are all these short songs that are, people scream them from the top of their lungs. David, Melech Israel, Chai, Chai. And it just goes on and goes on. There are seven encirclings. And when people have had enough of one dance, you know, somebody takes the Sefer Torah, he leads the procession, and then it goes around and around, and everybody dances with him. And when we've done three, four, five songs, then the message is yelled, Adkan Hakafa Aleph. That means, until here, the first round. Then we go back into the shul. And then we go out again, Hakafot Bet. And there are seven Hakafot.
So the
girls do exactly the same in Auckland. Even though we're an Orthodox organization and everything else, I think there is a misconception in some communities, isn't it, that the whole idea of ritual impurity and everything else, that can be passed on to a Sefer Torah, and therefore some women are reluctant not to touch the Sefer Torah. Let me say, in my humble opinion, of course, that couldn't be further from the truth. Because we define Torah as esh, as fire. And fire can, per definition, not be contaminated with any ritual impurity. Therefore, Sefer Torah cannot be imbued with any kind of ritual impurity, because it is in itself the fire that cleans itself.
Like the phoenix.
Well, hopefully it's not going to disintegrate. Hopefully it's going to burn forever and ever and ever. So that's...
Now, the seven times around, is that the same? Because in weddings they go around seven times?
Well, there are in Judaism, of course, 3, 4, 7, 8, 11, 13, and numbers, of course, have a great
significance.
Mm-hmm. The encirclement of the bride, of the groom, you know, is sort of to signify the idea that the world was created in 7 days. Some people say, well, 6 days and then Shabbat, but that's all in all together, 7 days. So why is she encircling him and not the other way around, if she's the sun and he's the... But rather, again, she's the moon. And not in any way bad connotation, because we have to remember that the Jewish people are highly influenced by the moon. Jewish religion is governed by the moon, not by the sun. The sun, we regulate towards the sun, but it's secondary to the moon. And a month is called a chodesh, but we also talk about a yareach, which is a moon. In that way, they were clever enough to figure out that the moon was going around the earth. And man is made from earth, and he's the simple and more earthbound creature of the two. Whereas the woman is seen more as a stellar element. We do the same thing, of course, for Simchat Torah. Is the root in seven is the same.
I thought it had connotations with the bridegroom thing.
No. Well, yes and no. No, I think that... It's
tenuous.
I mean, yes, because they all go back to that whole idea of seven days of creation. That's it. And then some have the tradition, well, also of imbibing amounts of, what should we say, fermented potato starch, distilled, also done on grain, going on the name of schnapps or vodka. And it is a time where people really
let their hair down.
Labor dig, as it's a labor dig. Yes. I mean, no, it's not like Purim. Purim is the day where things get turned upside down. Here we're dancing around with Sefer Torah, and we really have to remember
to... Well, you can't drop it.
No, exactly. And we have to remember not to behave in an inappropriate way. But it is certainly a joyous and festive day. And building on the paradigm that, well, spiritually we're capable of rejoicing, our body was fashioned from the ground, and therefore it's not the most clever thing, and therefore we give it a little bit of liquid spirits to so that our bodies as
together.
Well so that our body as well will understand that there's reason to rejoice. I mean, of course, it's not something that's done inside the shul. People are kindly asked to step outside if they want to take a gewesen. And it's not to be overdone.
This is a festival celebrating a book.
Books are a rather modern thing.
or a scroll.
Exactly. Well, books have only been around for 500 years, quite frankly. We've been running around with scrolls for thousands of years. So, yes.
But they have two festivals. One is having it been given, and the other one is receiving. One would think giving and receiving.
No, this is rather... The Simchat Torah is a new festival in the way that it only became common to celebrate the finishing of the annual cycle of reading in the 16th century.
So that's new from the 16th century.
Oh, yes, just like Gutenberg. It's modern stuff, like books, yes, absolutely. I mean, Simchat Torah is a rather new invention. It's not mentioned in the Torah. And that's why it's done together with Shemini Atzeret.
Right, to give it credibility.
Well, to give it, to lift it up to that status of Chag, and to make it more becovered, more...
honored.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. I'm glad your Yiddish is better than mine, at least in translation. It's a new festival, also because there have been different customs of... how to read the Torah. Some did it on a 3-year cycle, some did it on a 1-year cycle. So there's been a whole tradition of difference.
I was wondering about the year, because year is measured in different ways in different countries anyway.
Yes, true. I mean, it makes sense that we begin reading the Torah straight after Rosh Hashanah. Right. I mean, this is Jewish New Year, we're starting all over, so let's go back and start with... First things are first, Adam v'Chava, and creation. We start with that, and then we go through the whole Shemira once again. And we get to the end where Moshe says, thank you and goodbye.
And then it's Moshe signing off.
He's signing off. But the thing is, and this I think is one of the magic things about this whole idea, is that we don't stop. We don't stop. Almost in the same breath as we say the last word, the next word is being read from the beginning. And the fervor, the faithfulness of Jewish people is demonstrated in that ceremony and in this whole festivity that, no, we will never get to the end. We'll start over again.
The cycle goes round.
I mean, we're only that clever. We can learn more. And life is a one learning. I think that also... It also goes on the whole idea that, you know, many people have translated the word Torah with law, reading of the law. I don't appreciate that translation, because Torah comes from the same root as Le'aot, which means to illuminate or to light something up, which enlightenment is a teaching, right? You become enlightened. And the Torah is more correctly translated as the teaching. And we all know that after first grade comes second grade, comes third grade. And our school system doesn't stop there at 12, year 12. We just go on.
Hopefully.
Please God. Bis 120.
So is there any special rituals or something besides the dancing with the Torah? And I take it it's just the hopping around, it's not hip-hop.
There are some of the tunes that are rather modern tunes, but the words are ancient. I mean,
so the tunes can be different from different countries or congregations.
Yes, definitely there are pieces of psalms from the Psalms of David that are sung, many different tunes. Especially the Sephardi Jews have a richness of pismonim, which are liturgical songs or chants, exactly, and it can be very festive and you know, you normally have one who calls out and then everybody replies and the caller out goes on turn. We have one that we do, it's called Mipiel, which is based on the Sephardi pismon, which we sing every year, and it's one of my absolute favorites. And it makes you move. it gets you up there ringing, right?
Absolutely.
I think the
whole thing of a congregation doing things together, that the energy level or the, I don't know, something rises.
I don't want to, again, recur to technical terms, but the idea of mass psychosis has come into mind. It's fantastic. Of course it is. You feel like a family. You feel that togetherness. And it's a very, very strong drug. I mean, look, people have used it all over the world to create all kinds of movements. True. I don't have to mention any here.
But the sense of belonging is really important for one's well-being, I think.
Absolutely. You don't. This is something you don't want to be left out there in the cold and not feel that you're part of anything. Or of something, rather.
So, what message would you like to give our listeners?
Well, never to give up. Mm. Never forget your fervor. Mm. Come back in for more. That must be it. And come and rejoice. I mean, feel that Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, I mean, that's where most people come. You know the joke. Two Jews sitting next to each other in synagogue, and the one says to the other, ugh, it's just the same as last time I was here. Kol Nidre, Kol Nidre, Kol Nidre. Every time. And people come for these heavy and quite undigestible festivals. Instead, one year they should decide, I'm not coming for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. If I'm only going to go 2 days, it's going to be Simchat Torah and Purim. And then, wow, will you feel the joy and see how absolutely shattering great it is to be Jewish.
So I don't think the rabbi is telling you only go to shul twice.
No, really? God forbid. No. Just come in, for goodness sake.
I think he's saying you will be welcome, whatever.
Absolutely.
And the message is this, Simchas Torah, please enjoy, belong, and Chag Sameach.
Amen, Chag Sameach.
And thank you for listening. Don't forget to listen next Sunday at 9 a.m. when Rabbi Sheila Weinberg will be speaking to you. And if you've missed this program or you want to listen to it again, you can go to www.planetaudio.org.net/radioshalom.